currently in a beautiful part of Gloucestershire. It's nice, I can see the hills, it's been snowing, and on our way to visit Anna McNuff. It's hard to think of a more eclectic adventurer than her. She cycled 11,000 miles through all 50 US states. She's run the length of New Zealand and biked along the spine of the Andes. On top of all that, in 2019, she ran the distance of 100 marathons through Britain, barefoot. She's a girl guiding ambassador and works really hard to inspire others to take on their own adventures. I'm really looking forward to learning more about her. Let's go.
I'm Megan Hine, survival consultant on shows such as Man vs. Wild and Running Wild with Bear Grylls. I'm also an expedition leader. This is The Power of Adventure, the podcast where we delve into what adventure really means and what makes those who crave it tick.
Anna, I've been so excited to come and talk to you. I've been following you stalking you on social media for quite a long time now. And, you know, whenever your pictures pop up on my feed, it's always this splodge of colour that just makes me smile.
Oh, thank you.
It's brilliant. And there was a picture recently that popped up on my feed, was you dressed as this Roman soldier. And I was like, my goodness, like, I want to be able to go and do that with you. It just looks so much fun.
Well, that was, I think it was a realization that once I got back into adventuring, it wasn't till my late 20s that I started doing more adventures. And I just thought it's an amazing way to learn about the world around us. And I think it took me back to being at school. And I thought I was starting to visit all these places and everything was really exciting about them, including geography and history and things that were so boring when I was at school. Yeah. And I really struggled to take in the information. And then suddenly there I was getting excited about some crumbly old ruin at the top of a hill. So that came from me going, okay, what else is there in Britain that I haven't seen that I should explore? And then, yeah, I read about Hadrian's Wall and my friend's a history teacher, so I just said, let's dress up as Roman soldiers and run the length of Hadrian's Wall and learn about it as we go along. And it was an immersive history lesson, and it was hilarious because we're in the Roman soldier get up and we'd be at the top of a hill and our capes are just flapping in the wind and you can see the people on the next hill looking at us thinking, what is going on? Who are these two creatures? But I just think it's a great way to learn about the landscapes you're going through, and fancy dress just always makes everything more fun. That's amazing.
Where did the idea from that come from? Was it, were you sitting in a pub, or was it very sort of very planned out?
No, none of my ideas, some of them end up planned out, but it just starts as a, I wonder, ... And then I think what happens quite often is we cut that off straight away, don't we? We say, oh, I wonder, ... And then the voice comes in, you can't possibly do that because you're an adult. Fancy dress is ridiculous. All of those things. You know, also another thing is, oh, why would I go and run Hadrian's Wall? So many people have walked it, hiked it. You know, it's not like a kind of a first thing. But then if you just follow that, I wonder, ... And I just thought, is this going to be fun? I'm going to enjoy days of my life. I'm going to be getting to know my own country better. I get to hang out with a friend and put my phone away. Yeah. And I guess it's about letting that, I wonder, go for a little run.
And is that how the majority of your adventures start then? Is it with the I wonder?
Well, it's interesting as well. And I don't know what happens with your trips, but they kind of form in this ethereal magic ball where it might be like a piece of it enters my mind. And I think, so for example, with the New Zealand run, I started to have this overwhelming urge of, I desperately want to go to New Zealand. Everyone keeps talking about it. I keep getting emails from the Lonely Planet popping into my inbox, and you start to see things and think, New Zealand's pretty cool. And then I happen to find out there's a trail, and I've also been thinking about the fact that I want to do a run, and all those things collide. And I have this moment, I think, could I go and run that trail in New Zealand? And then it won't leave me alone. That idea, I just can't stop thinking about it. It's kind of, I describe it like it sits in the corner of the room the whole time. And that's when I know that is the adventure I have to go and do. It will not leave me alone.
Amazing. So fascinating. And with your New Zealand trip, I mean, this was literally like thousands of miles, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple thousand. I think it was, close to 2,000 in the end. Yeah, it was beastly. And of course, you know mountains very well. And I grew up on the outskirts of London, so I'd done some mountainous trips, but nothing like New Zealand. And they've got some serious mountains out there. And I was in quite over my head quite quickly. But at the same time, that's what made it amazing. It was so uncomfortable in a lot of ways and so different to anything I'd done before. And I had to be so self-sufficient as well, which, I mean, there's just something so amazing about coming out of the bush, having not seen anyone for 3 days, and just thinking, I did that. I solved all the problems in there. And, I just want to be like, oh, warrior, and then go back to drinking my coffee in a coffee shop, But I think that's missing from a lot of our lives, that kind of that wildness and that need to rely on yourself and get yourself out of tricky fixes. So that's what New Zealand did for me. And I finished it with this amazing, just a quiet confidence that I didn't have before.
Yeah, because New Zealand is really wild, isn't it? It's hard for rescue teams to get into those areas because they're very forested, very mountainous as well. I mean, so with a trip like New Zealand, I mean, what are you thinking about before you go in terms of like the preparation and the safety behind all of that?
Yeah, so I do have a tendency to be pretty slapdash, and I think sometimes it comes across like I don't think about any of that at all. But I do think about it, but I only think about it to the point where, am I safe and comfortable going into this environment? And so I had myself a GPS, spot tracker, and I took local advice on what I needed going into those areas to make sure I was safe. But then beyond that, I don't like to over plan or over know. There were people I met they were walking the trail and they had pages and pages of notes about left here, right here. And I felt like that might turn me into a meltdown mode because I couldn't possibly hold all that information in my head. And also what it made me do was worry if I knew about the river crossings that were coming up in 2 months' time, I would just worry about those river crossings for 2 months. So I'd only ever think about a week ahead and think, right, what crossings have I got happening in that week? Yeah. So I guess it's a mixture. I just do the bare minimum to make sure I'm safe. And then just go for it. Yeah.
It's funny because it's like you talk about it and you say, in a couple of months I'll be crossing that. And that's what's so crazy and so amazing about your trips is that they're not just, you're not just out there for a couple of days. It's like a full on immersion, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it takes, I call it like the elastic band. It takes about 6 weeks of, you start the adventure and there's this wave of, oh, I've made it, I've actually got to the start line, which is difficult in itself. But then you have this month to 6 weeks of real discomfort where you're questioning whether this was a good idea.
6 weeks when you've actually the trail or out there in the wilderness.
Yeah, when you've started and you're questioning whether it's a good idea or whether you've got in too far and in over your head and whether you're just going to fail miserably in front of everyone on social media. And then I find something happens after that 6 weeks where it's like you're stretching and stretching away from normality, and then that elastic band, it just snaps and you kind of just get released into it. But within that first period, all you want to do is go back to normality and just be safe and comfortable.
And how do you push through that? Because 6 weeks, that's a long time.
It is. Yeah, sometimes it's less. Don't know why I said six, but it is. I think 6 weeks is about, I always find that's about the fitness level as well. Your fitness, okay. My fitness always seems to kick in after about 6 weeks as well.
Yeah.
So I guess it's trying to remind yourself that it will change and you will feel like this is a fantastic idea and you'll feel comfortable. And the things at the moment that feel clunky, like even, cooking your dinner on a stove and looking for a tent spot each night, they will suddenly become second nature and just basically, like popping down the shops for some milk, it will become part and parcel. So I think it's trying to, but of course, when you're in it, you're thinking this is never going to get better. I'm just going to be nervous the whole time. And then every time it gets better.
Yeah. So, I mean, from doing all these trips, does it build up an inner confidence in yourself? Because once you're out there on a lot of the trips, you're by yourself, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely does. And I get a lot of people say to me, oh, I want to go on a journey, but should I go by myself or with someone else? And I have done a long bike trip with someone else. And I would say it's a lot more fun with someone else because your highs and lows are kind of opposite waves of the ocean. One minute you're up and they're down and you can bring each other up and down. But I would say if you want to get to know yourself and you want to have that inner confidence as a result of it, you've got to go by yourself, because you will realise you've got everything within you that you need to make it. And that's an amazing thing to take into the rest of your life, I think.
Yeah, and those skills are, and that knowledge, is that's transferable into everyday life, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do try and remember that when I'm getting the spinning beach ball of death on my laptop, you know, and I try and go, this is not an issue, Anna. An issue is food and shelter, you know, but it does. It kind of stretches your horizon. So
yeah.
What you've been able to cope with is stretched. So actually a problem in everyday life isn't really a problem, you know, and yeah, it does give you that confidence.
So for you, where did it all start? Is this something that's always been inherently inside you, or is it something that kind of burst out later on in life?
No, it's a bit of a weird journey. I definitely didn't have... I had a very sporty upbringing. So
your parents were Olympic?
They were both Olympic rowers. Right. Which, of course, when you're a kid, you just think it's normal, don't you?
Yes.
Whatever. My dad's got a bronze medal hanging on our living room wall. I just thought he got it from like B&Q or something. You know, so that's it, isn't it? And my godfather's got gold. It's like, whatever. But I grew up with, I guess, activity and being outside being a huge part of my life. But it was a lot of elite sport. So a lot about watches and times and heart rates. And and I ended up rowing for Britain and doing that for a while myself. And so that was till my mid-20s. And it wasn't till I was 28 that I decided, actually, I quite like just being outdoors and, yes, you know, pushing my body, but not being worried about what times I was going for or having a training program. I mean, the concept of not having a training program at that point was just... was beyond me. I couldn't believe that. What do you mean you don't have a training program if you're going to go and do something? And
yeah, I mean, how hard was it to make that transition then from, I suppose, like micromanaging everything through to the freedom of the wilderness?
Well, funnily enough, I think I realized it suited me a lot better. because, you know, and I'd grown up and all I wanted to be was an Olympian, and I didn't make it, and that was a real sucker punch at the time, because that's everything I wanted to be when I was a kid. But actually I realized that I had this wanderlust that I was trying to fulfill through being in an international rowing team, but really I was going backwards down a 2 kilometer lake, and that you don't see a huge amount of the world like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you see the back of the woman's head in front of you, it's great. But so actually it was relatively easy, because I suddenly felt like me, and I definitely feel the most like me, I realise, when I'm halfway up a mountain, you know, my arms are tanned, covered in dirt, I've not had a shower in 10 days, and everything I'm seeing is new. And I think it was just such a relief to actually go, this is what I love, and that's really exciting. So it was quite cool that I didn't find it till a bit later on. So
yeah. And do you think finding it later on has brought it more of like a strategy to, as you move forwards now with it all?
Yeah, I think so. I think I always say I wish I could put the confidence I have now back in my 23-year-old's head, because I think I would have done better in my rowing career, because I had so much, you know, the negative voices, the you can't do that voices. I had so much of that when I was younger, and I still have them now, but they're a lot quieter and I can manage them better. So I feel like being a bit older and hopefully a bit wiser, I don't know. we'll see. Jury's out. But I do think you care a bit less about what people think when you're older, and you just think, you know what, let's just go for it. Whatever happens will happen. And so I definitely think being older and being able to do adventures, I feel grateful for that, yeah.
Yeah. And so those little voices in the head, I mean, we all have them.
Mm.
And, you know, they can really be very limiting and impose, like, limitations on us. I mean, how on earth, like, when you're cold, you're wet, you've got several thousand miles in front of you still.
Yeah.
I mean, how on earth do you keep going with those little voices there?
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because they're always there. No, honestly, where do they come from? I think there's two things that I do. The first one that I've realised is that if I'm freaking out, it's normally that it's not actually what's happening in that moment. I'm actually freaking out because I think, I'm exhausted right now, I'm tired, I'm cold, I'm wet. That means I'm going to be exhausted and tired and cold and wet for the next 4 months of this journey. Therefore, my life is going to be miserable. Yeah. Oh my gosh, freak out. And actually, if you stop and go, no, I'm tired and cold and wet, and maybe it'll last the next mile, maybe it'll last to the end of the day, but it will change.
Yes,
you know, nothing good or bad, nothing stays the same forever. So
it's like an acceptance.
An acceptance of it, yeah. And that it's not permanent. There's nothing permanent in life. It will change. And whether that means you need to do something, you can, you know, push a few buttons and think, well, will I do that? Will it feel better? Or whether the moving through the journey will make things change, but it will change. So I try and remind myself of that. And then I actually find, oh, I feel a lot calmer. I just think, oh, great, you know. Yeah. But the second thing is when I was in New Zealand, because the negative voices were quite strong there because it was my first big running adventure. Right. And so I created these characters in my head that I caught... This is where I sound loopy, right? But I'm on my own in the bush for days on end, right? I had I called them the soldiers of self-doubt because and they are the voices that, yeah, the negative, you can't do that. You're running slowly. You're supposed to be doing a run. Anna, call this a run. You know, I'm going up like a mountain peak telling myself I'm not running fast enough. And then, so I thought, this is not fun. I'm not having a fun time. And the only reason I'm not having fun is because I'm telling myself I'm too slow and this isn't good enough. So I then created these cheerleaders in my head, right? So, and they're in my cheerleaders are very loud and American and they, you know, they just, their pom-poms everywhere. Amazing. They tell me I'm red hot. But I created them. And so I thought, right, that's a game. Let's do this. Every time the soldiers of self-doubt came out, I would say, come on, cheerleaders, out you come. The cheerleading voices would come out. Good job, Anna. Well done. You're doing awesome. If you can keep this up, blah, blah, blah. And just basically kick the soldiers in the nuts and just say no. Like, you are not allowed, and refuse the thoughts. Suddenly, like, the trip just got a whole lot more fun because I just been kinder to myself. And so I think whatever your cheerleaders are, whatever version of that is, whatever names you give those two voices, you know, those voices are always going to be there and they're trying to protect you, but just create something that equals that.
Yeah. I think that's an amazing lesson, because I think there's so much stress now, isn't there, inherently in like everyday lives, that we don't necessarily, can't pinpoint exactly where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And it's just this overwhelming sense, because there's so much pressure on now, isn't there, in life, that, you know, actually having, you know, your soldiers of self-doubt pop up with your cheerleaders, that's such a great way of like managing those emotions in life, isn't it?
That's it. And I always think, if we spoke to our friends the same way we speak to ourselves in our head, like, we would not be friends with that person.
It's so true, isn't
it's
it?
It's horrible.
Like, we're so horrible to ourselves.
Oh my gosh, we're dreadful. Yeah. And if you think about a world where everyone's doing that to themselves, you know, no one's really caring what other people think. So, yeah.
No, this is interesting, because this is something that I do as well myself. It's like, I wonder sometimes, you know, those inner voices that give you a lot of negativity. And it's like, you're right. It's like the way that I talk to myself sometimes in my head, I would never dream of talking to anybody else like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, but at the same time, do those little voices also drive you on and
absolutely
help you be successful as well?
Yeah, I think they do. I think you're right. And so I wouldn't want that part of myself to disappear completely, because they are your ambition and the bar you set yourself. And that's, but it's about keeping them in check, I guess.
And get the cheerleaders back on
board. That's it. As long as there's both of them in the room having a little battle, then you're fine. Yeah.
That's such a great analogy. I love that. So much. I'm going to try that out.
I would love to hear your cheerleaders, Meg. I think they'd be great.
There's a trip that you've just finished recently that I couldn't wait to come and talk to you about, because it's just blown my mind. And this has been your Barefoot Britain Challenge, which is something you've just finished. This, is that, am I right in that?
Yeah, a few months ago. Yeah.
I mean, can you tell us about that to start with, what that is?
Yeah. So having done, and like we were talking earlier about challenge being relative. So having done the adventures I'd done before, I'd just been made the ambassador for girl guiding. And I thought, right, I want to do a run in Britain and I want to talk to girls as I go along about the stuff I've learned through adventure. And then I thought about what my message would be. And it was about that. You've got to take on things where you feel that 50% terrified, 50% excited. And then I just thought, well, if I do a run in trainers, I'm not terrified. I actually think I could do it. Even though that sounds ridiculous to other people. It's a tiny little voice that says, yeah, you think you can do that. And I thought, then I'm not being honest. You know, I'm not on that journey myself. And how can I talk to the girls about that? So I just had this crazy little voice that just said, why don't you do it with no shoes on? And of course, I then thought, don't be ridiculous, and just battered it aside. And then again, it just wouldn't leave me alone. The idea would not leave me alone. So I got to the point where I thought, right, okay, I'm going to try and run the distance of 50 marathons with no shoes on. And I had a coffee with Jamie, my boyfriend, and he just took a sip of coffee and listened to my idea and said, yeah, okay, great. And then he went, 100 sounds better though, doesn't it? And that was it. And I went, oh, it does. And I had this wave of, oh, I can't do that. And I thought, oh, that's it. That's that wave. That's the right idea. I'm terrified. And that's what I set out to do, is try and run the distance of 100 marathons. So 2,600 miles from the Shetland Islands to London, but with a lot of wiggling in between. There was a lot of wiggling.
I mean, how do you even prepare? I mean, like, for a start, I mean, your feet, how do you prepare your feet to take on a challenge like that?
I was more cautious on this adventure than I had been in other ones, because I thought, you can't mess around on this one, Anna. You know, I knew that other people had done big cycles and big runs. So, and lots of them, you know, lots of people have done that as well. Whereas researching for this, I realised there's not that many people that had done it, probably for good reason. But so then I didn't have that assurance. So I thought, right, you've got to take this seriously. So I did take some advice from a running gait coach, and I got a podiatrist friend to look at my feet and just say to me, do I have completely the wrong type of feet and body structure to do this? Am I, you know, kidding myself?
Right.
And they just, I think I was looking for a way out, basically. But they just basically said, no, actually great. You know, the way you run is good work. And so I took some advice on that. And then I spent a year and a half training. But before that, I'd been in minimalist shoes. So with very little support for about 3 years anyway, just right. Because I liked the way it felt for my feet.
Yeah.
But I did then spend a year and a half transitioning down. And then I think 6 months of that was completely barefoot. But the first year right. before that was sort of just getting less and less
support.
And
how do you transition? Because I know there's a lot of, you know, for a while there was a lot of press on barefoot running and,
yeah.
and things. I mean, how do you transition from, you know, what we've kind of come to know as kind of standard running trainers to minimalist and then to full on barefoot running?
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, have you read Born to Run? That?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I read that book. Yeah, yeah. It is, isn't it? Yeah. I went out, bought a pair of those five finger monkey shoes,
oh, yes, yeah.
ran 10K, smashed my calves a bit. And then went, right, so I had that experience from a few years ago, so I thought, don't do that. So just really gradual. So I went out and I just started upping my mileage in minimalist shoes. And then I got these things called their Skinner's socks, and they're basically, it's like a sock with a rubber bottom.
Right.
And so then I would go out and say run 10 miles, but put the Skinner's socks on for 2 miles at the end of it.
Yeah.
And then just keep shifting that balance until I was doing all my runs in the Skinner's socks. And then over that 6 months, I would go out with the Skinner socks, take them off in the last 2 miles. So, you know, so I'd be barefoot for 2 miles and then shift that balance again, if that makes sense.
Yes,
so it's
yeah.
kind of like just a slow shift.
Yeah.
And the whole way through, I'm second guessing myself because my Achilles are in agony. My calves are sore. But I did find that you know, sometimes I'd push too hard and I'd have to back off and say, no, I'm not ready for right. that yet. But eventually... I managed to be running around barefoot and feeling fine and not having an issue with it. I still went to the start line thinking, all right, okay, the most I'd done was I did the London Marathon barefoot. But other than that, I hadn't run consecutive back-to-back days of 20 plus miles. So it was still a whole world of, oh my gosh, what am I doing? But there was at least that glimmer of hope of, I think this is possible. Whether I can do it or not is another thing, but I think it's possible at least.
Yeah, well, I think through following your social media, and I think so many people were like tuning in to you and this run. And it's like, you know, there were times when it's like, you know, you could literally see like the bottom of your foot is falling off. You're like, oh no, come on, Anna.
Like,
I mean, it's amazing like how many people got behind you on that.
I think it's because I was trying to work out what is it, because it was an adventure that people really did get so involved and engrossed in. And I think it was that it's so relatable in the sense that we all know what it's like to take our shoes off and stand on a piece of Lego.
Yeah,
Lego,
that's it.
Yeah, ouch, yeah. And try and, like, when you're in Brighton, hobble down to the sea and on the beach. We all know what that feels like. So I think people... You know, sometimes I think with rowing oceans and going to Antarctica, people have never experienced that, so you don't know what it feels like. But everyone knows what it feels like to have your shoes off.
Yes.
And then they can go, what? And that's why I described it, even though I wasn't running a marathon every day, I described it in the marathon distance, because I thought at least that's a way people can understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But it was. But like you said, there was a lot of people following it, which... It was the most social media heavy adventure I did, which with that came a lot of pressure as well and a lot of not wanting to let people down.
Does that affect your performance?
I think it can do if you let it. And I would try and, if once I start running, I would try and put my phone on airplane mode and stick it away in my backpack so that I'm not constantly, that I do have that headspace. Because as soon as I got into a town, it was straight into a girl guiding talk and meeting a new host. And, you know, energy, 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 which is great. But by the end of the run, I was literally a zombie and people were talking to me and I couldn't even remember the word for jacket potato in the last, which I know is a first world problem. But I stood at this cafe and said, I'll have a, and I could see it and I was describing it. And I said, it's a fluffy, you put butter in it, beans. She said, do you want a jacket potato? I said, yes, please. And my brain was just smush, absolute smush from all of the, I guess, the logistics and the people and the social mediaing. But yeah, it was an absolutely amazing adventure.
Yeah, I mean, do you have any strange encounters when you're on these trips?
I mean, well, what was amazing was more watching people go on their own mini adventures within my adventure. It was like Inception.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, and I was trying to work out what was going on because it was bizarre. People kept coming out and they kept running further than they ever had, even though they'd tell me they're just going to run a few miles. They'd then still be there 15 miles, 20 miles later and going, I can't believe I just did that. And I think it was because I was quite last minute with my my planning on when they had to meet and where. So quite a lot of them had to carve out a whole day.
Right.
Because they didn't know what I was doing or when I was going to meet.
Yeah.
And they'd had to sort out childcare. And sometimes even they'd taken a day off work, you know. When do you ever take a Wednesday off work just to go for a run? Like, that's basically what they'd done. And so when they turned up to run with me, there was no pressure. And I, come, don't come, you know, whatever. And they'd like abandoned their car in a ditch or something and thought, I'll get back to it later. And they were working out with others to get taxis back. And because I'm running in one direction, of course. Yeah. And so I think there was something about it created this environment where there was no pressure. They'd taken the pressure off themselves. They were just out there for the enjoyment.
Yeah.
And I call it running at adventure pace. You know, I don't wear a watch. We stopped in, went past a kids' playground. You have to go on the kids' playground. We stopped for coffee halfway through the day.
Yeah.
And it just meant that people surprised themselves that they were going further than they had done. So I guess that was the amazing thing that started to happen. And it was nice from my perspective because it wasn't then about me. You know, these days were about Mike, who ran 24 miles when he'd only ever run five before. And we had a woman that was, she's a nurse and she came off a double night shift and called Amy. And she told me she was just going to run 3 miles and she made it 24 again. And by the end of it, she was every road junction, she was dropping to her knees. And we're like, you're right, Amy. Yeah. And then we're like, do you want some jelly babies, Amy? We just feed her jelly babies on her hands and knees. And then she'd get up with this roar and just, ah! It was just, honestly, and clapping her into the car park at the end, like, I'm almost in tears. She's in tears because she can't believe she's done it. And she got to the end of that and she said, oh, it was amazing because she'd always told herself she could never run a half marathon.
Yeah.
And she'd just gone on, you know, almost a marathon.
Oh, it's amazing. What an amazing gift to give them.
Yeah, oh, it was brilliant. I don't think I fully processed all those stories yet, if that makes sense. Because
no, absolutely. But, I totally relate to that.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
Sat next to you here, you've got this incredible, I think it's a flag, and it's like, because this was a huge part of your journey as well, wasn't it, with empowering young women as well and girls,
with
the girl guiding.
I just want you to go in and tell them stories, and I just think with girls, you know, it's great to talk about we can do this too and we're a woman, but I think you just got to do it and you've got to show them.
Yeah.
And that's the best way. And so I thought, if I can go into these girls, and quite often I was coming off the back of, I'd literally just finished the run, you know. Yeah. My feet are disgusting. I've got sheep poo and goodness knows what else all over them.
You can imagine.
Yeah. And I go in there and the girls are just like, what? And then I basically gave this talk, which was a kind of a mashup of all my best stories from all the adventures I had. And I just thought, if even one of them leaves there with the idea that, A, if you've got a crazy idea, maybe it's not that crazy, but also just be yourself, just do whatever it is that you love to do, just do it. Even if it's history or science, it doesn't have to be adventure.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just trying to just go from the ground up, you know, and just show them exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge believer in that as well. It's like, you know, we can scream and shout and look at me, like, we need to change the world, but the only way of doing that is by actually getting out there and doing it and showing people and sowing those little seeds in people's minds that actually, you know, of course they can do it.
Yeah, it's not even, it's a non-issue. That's, I mean, I grew up with two brothers, so to me it's a non-issue, and it's probably a non-issue for you as well in the terms of you just do it.
No,
you,
absolutely. I mean, obviously, like, gender does, you know, it has, I suppose, actually, the higher up my career ladder I've climbed, the more of an issue it's become. But it's never been an issue for me. Can you describe what the flag is? I mean, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. So this was actually in my last few weeks during the period where I could not remember the name for Jacket Potato. This woman appeared, and it's a bright pink flag, and it's got a girl guiding emblem on it, and it says Go Anna, and it's got some barefoot prints on there, and it's beautifully made. And I couldn't, you know, I've had a few flags and banners and stuff as I'd gone along, but this one was just so special. And she she just turned up with it and was proudly holding it. But then I said can you carry it? Because I was so tired and I had quite a heavy pack on that day, and I was like, I just literally can't carry this. She said, oh no, I'll carry it. And then, so of course, she was carrying it, so she'd get it out at certain road junctions and just stand there and whoa, go Anna.
You're the mastermind of Adventure Queens, is that?
Actually, I can't take full credit. So I founded it with my friend Emma, and she runs the day-to-day of it. And she is, I mean, she does those smaller adventures, and it really was set up with the idea of trying to get women outdoors, or at least find people that they can go outdoors with. Because so many people would say to me, oh, I really want to go on a hike or go and sleep on top of a hill, but all of my friends aren't into that. And which to me is just mad, because all of my friends are up for that. Now they are anyway. So it was just set up with the idea of creating a community that would support each other and give each other a place to go and hang out outdoors. But she does run the day-to-day of it, so I kind of help steer the ship now. But it's brilliant. Again, that's just set that community up, watch it blossom, and it sort of runs itself, because we've got 30 volunteers who are all from within the community.
And there's a lot of members as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I think we're sort of close to 10,000 across all the different platforms, which is amazing. And some areas are stronger than others. Like South Wales has got a really strong contingent that are always out hanging out together. Yeah. But I think that was just, that came from if someone wants to get outside, but there's a barrier that's stopping them, and one of those barriers is either confidence or people to do it with, then that, if that can help remove it, then brilliant. And when we have campouts, we do things like, if someone turns up and they turn up with a tent, they're looking really nervous, and we say, have you ever camped before? No. Is this the first time you've set up your tent? Then yeah. And then everyone just cheers because it's like, let's make a mess of it, awesome, rather than them feeling like, oh, someone's going to watch me and I'm going to make it, you know, not know. And also, I don't know about you, but every time I set up a new tent, I don't know what I'm doing. I know how to set up my tent, and but you're probably a pro. But
no, they're all different, aren't they?
That's it.
Pole go? Yeah.
So I guess it's just trying to drop the expectation that everyone knows what they're doing when they're taking to the outdoors, and just saying, you've got to give things a go.
Yeah. So aside from obviously joining Adventure Queens, which is an incredible forum, I occasionally go in there and have a look at what people are doing, and it's so supportive. And it's like, you know, people ask a question or, you know, say that they want to get out, and there's like hundreds of comments straight away underneath it all. Yeah. And it's so empowering, and it's very, very supportive. But so aside from joining that, what are a few steps that people could take to maybe get outside and be a little bit more adventurous in their everyday lives?
Yeah, I think local groups is a really good way to go. And especially when you go to join those local groups, don't be nervous. Realise that, you know, if you don't know what you're doing or whatever, that's brilliant. That will be celebrated. So just go for it. I think it's committing to make that time, a bit like the people did on my run. You know, imagine that your adventure is like an important meeting, and block it in your diary, and don't let things run over it, because it's really easy to say, oh, I'm going to go on a hike this Friday afternoon or whatever, but then life gets busy and whatever. But treat that like it is an important business meeting, and protect that time and space, because what you get from being outdoors is so much more valuable than you'll ever get by doing all the errands, going to the post office, like, yeah, you know, all that so stuff true. That you feel like you should do. So yeah, protect that time, I guess. And then if you've got an adventure idea, no matter how small, whatever it is for you, I think tell three people in your life that you really trust, that are very positive and supportive, and write it down and start talking about it, because the second it leaves your mouth, it starts to become a reality, and then there's no way back, and it's terrifying. But I think people don't do that step. They let all these ideas go around in their head and they never actually tell anyone. And the response they get is probably going to be a positive, supportive one.
Anna, thank you so much. And this has been an incredibly informative and enlightening experience. I mean, all the mindset behind, you know, what it takes to actually take on these adventures and to take other people along with you on that. I'm just mind blown. So thank you so much for your time on this. It's been amazing.
Thank you. Total pleasure.
So I've just finished talking to Anna and I come away with so much to think about. I mean, so much of the way that she views the world and adventure is very similar to my own. And although, you know, our backgrounds are different in terms of going off and doing these adventures, it's very, very similar in terms of the way that we view them and in mindset and the need to have like this incredibly powerful confidence in yourself. And it's just, I mean, for me, it's great to actually talk to somebody so like-minded. And, you know, I've got a lot to go away and think about.
Adventure was a TBI production brought to you by Wilbur Smith, the 21st century master of adventure storytelling. Adventure enables self-discovery through direct experience or from the perspective of someone else. Find out more at wilbursmithbooks.com.